You're listening to The Crossover with Joe R. Lucas.
Hey, hey, welcome to The Crossover with me, Joe R. Lucas, brought to you by the Turkish Airlines EuroLeague. Throughout this season, this is where I'll bring you exclusive interviews with your favorite coaches, players, and legends. Each episode, I'll be getting down and dirty with some very special guests as I try to find out what life is like on and off the court for Europe's elite. Make sure to stay tuned in because no subject is out of bounds. I actually love doing these podcasts, especially when I get to sit down with a guy like Kirilbet Baskonia guard Jason Granger. Jason, welcome to The Crossover, my man. How you doing?
I'm doing really good.
Just got in from a road trip, huh?
Yeah, home trip after a tough game. We got next one tomorrow.
Well, we appreciate you coming here to spend some time with us. My first question right off the bat is, how many times have people told you that you look like Kobe Bryant?
Every single week.
I couldn't resist it.
Oh, man. Every single day. Even walking in Vitoria, when I really felt like no one's going to ask me about Kobe Bryant, Vitoria, you know, every single day, a lot of people ask me, are you Kobe Bryant? I'm like, I wish.
At least the bank account, right?
Exactly.
At least the bank account. The first time I saw you play out here, I was like, damn, he looks just like Kobe. There's no way. You got the same mannerisms, too.
Yeah, I mean, especially when I go back home to the state. I mean, a lot of people ask me, like, really ask me serious, like, if I'm Kobe Bryant. I'm like, nah, hey, man, not really.
If you need to get in a restaurant or get in a bar or something, you know?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I had a lot of stories about that.
There you go. Maybe we'll get into that. I was checking you out, and the funniest thing I saw was that you were 6'2.5" without shoes on, which is 189 centimeters. And you're the only person I've ever seen where it said without shoes. Did you try to, like, go 6'6 at one time and get over it?
I tried, but you know how it works. You've been in this situation before. They're always trying to get you high without shoes, so I really tried.
They took those shoes off, said, no, ain't no lying to me. You just turned 29 last month, right?
Yes, 29.
Relatively young in this sport. You're kind of in that mode where you're physically and mentally.
I feel great. I mean, the thing is, like, I started playing pro when I was 16. Mm-hmm. I came from Uruguay, so I've been a pro for 13 years. So they call me like a young vet. Exactly. You know. So
well, I'm gonna take you back to Montevideo, no?
Exactly. Uruguay.
You come from some great genes, obviously. I read that your mom did a marathon at 51 years old.
Yeah, my mom.
3 hours and 25 minutes.
She does ultra marathons right now.
Ultra marathons. Yeah, she's taking it up a notch.
Over 100 kilometers right now. She's preparing one from next couple months. Go to France is 165 kilometers. So
was she a ball player?
She was when she was young. I mean, she played for the Hawaiian national team. Like, all my family played basketball.
Right.
But after, when she was like around 35, she did like this Nike runnings, marathons, and she really did it pretty well. So people started asking her if she want to be a pro. So she started doing it, and she's doing really well right now.
I was with the guy Dean, can't remember his last name, in Greece this weekend, and he ran. He's the guy that ran 50 marathons in 50 states in 50 days.
Yes, I heard about him.
That's crazy.
That's sick. That's crazy. I'm not the guy who really
liked
him.
I asked him. I said, "What'd you do last weekend?" He said, "I ran 190 kilometers." I'm like, "190?" I'm like, "What, are you crazy?" Your dad Jeff obviously played ball. You chose basketball because you had both of your parents. You didn't go the marathon route, obviously.
No, definitely not. But me as a Uruguayan, I started playing soccer. Like, everybody plays soccer in the country, but
that question's coming.
Exactly. But everyone in the family, dad, mom, sister, brother, cousins.
You mean your dad played soccer?
Yes. No, really? Not my dad.
Oh, okay.
Everybody played basketball.
Oh, they played basketball.
So at the age of 9, I was all right, I got to pick between basketball and coach. So I took basketball.
Is it soccer there or football there?
Yeah, football, exactly.
Football,
yeah.
All right, which is how we know what we're talking about. A lot of people who listen to us are English, too, so they got to hear that football there. You remember watching your dad play?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yes.
Because he's relatively young. How old is he?
Right now, he's 61.
He's a little older than me. That's good. I always like when people are older than me. That always makes me feel a little bit better. But you saw him play and saw him win the championship with Uruguay.
Yes, he played with the national team, won two championships with the national team, won a couple more with some teams back in Uruguay. So, I mean, he's still there. So he really loved the country. People love him. He was the second American came to play basketball in Uruguay back in the 1980s. So people love him. He loved the country. So
he's born in the States.
Yes,
right?
In Jersey.
Nationalized.
Exactly.
Jersey boy.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I'm an upstate New York boy. having a dad as an ex-player and your mom, obviously, also, was it, did you feel like it was more difficult to achieve the things you wanted? Because sometimes, even though parents, they want to help, they get in the way sometimes. And I'm trying to say this politically correct. and they develop obstacles for kids as they're growing.
I understand what you're saying. But, I mean, I was lucky with my parents because they always gave me the freedom to do whatever I want. If I want to do sports, I want to study or play video games, they really taught me, like, if you want to do something, try to do it the best way possible and have fun. So in that moment, I started playing soccer. Then I did karate. Then I played ping pong. And then I chose basketball.
Oh, we're going to have to go at it at ping pong. Yes. Man. We have to go
they
at
call
it
me over. Jason Lean.
I ain't going to touch you in karate, but
I'm really good in ping pong.
I might be able to shut you down in ping pong. I
got to tell. If you tell me Rodrigo what, he can tell you about it.
Did you feel any pressure to make it, or just
it was a love of the game. It was when I was a kid, I want to be like my parents. It was a kind of motivation.
The whole thing started for you with, I'm going to throw a name out at you that should be close to your heart a little bit, Club Atletico Cordon in your hometown. What was it like playing in that club? Like I said, we talked about it's a football country. But this club, was it basketball and football?
No, it was just basketball.
It was just basketball.
But I grew up there because my dad was playing for that team.
Oh, okay.
So he played for that same club. He played for the same club. He won a 3 championship with the club. And when I was 3, 4, 5 years old, I was always running around with a basketball under my arm, watching practice. So basically I grew up in that gym.
Now, you can't tell me that you didn't play soccer because I've called a couple of your games and I've seen that ball like roll over to you. And you got this nice little touch where you're able to like, I don't know how you do it. You know, I'm America, man. I used to see these guys all the time when I came out here like doing it. And I'm like, man, you're not supposed to touch that basketball with your foot, you know? But you got a little touch there.
I mean, I played like 6 years soccer. I mean, if you're from Uruguay, you better know how to play soccer. Yeah, that's the main thing over there.
That's like going out with your boys that play together and they bring out the soccer ball. You
had no choice.
Speaking of soccer, football, whatever you want to call it, there's a nasty rumor going around that you're a Real Madrid fan.
Nah, that's a big lie. I can't say that, but that's a big lie. I'm more Atlético de Madrid.
That's what I heard.
I mean, I came with 15. I played for Estudiantes. You know, how's the rivalry over there between Real Madrid and Estudiantes. So when
stuck with the other side.
And I know a couple Uruguayan players who play in Atlético de Madrid, so I got a good relation with them.
Who do you know?
Godín.
Okay.
Godín and Jiménez.
All right, it's all mandatory.
If we have some Uruguayan in Real Madrid, maybe, who knows?
Let's get back to your club for a little bit. What are your feelings towards them today? Back in the day when you arrived at Estudiantes, you had some issues with them that prevented you from playing. And I know that was a tough time for you, coming here.
It was really tough because as a 15-year-old kid coming from Uruguay, trying to make my dreams come true. You know, I spent like 1.5 years without playing, only going to school and practice was really tough. But especially my mom and my dad, they really helped me because I really want to give up and go back to Uruguay and keep playing over there because it was really tough moment for me.
You were about to give up here.
Exactly.
Really?
Yes, because I came to play basketball. I mean, I wasn't worried about the money.
But you were playing, but you were just practicing?
Just practice, no games because I had the right papers.
You were in that EBA at that time. Yeah, so anybody who doesn't know, League EBA is like a fourth division.
Yeah, with 16, I was practicing with the junior team, EBA, and sometimes with the first team, but it was just practice. And me as a kid of 16 years old,
And you were just not allowed to play
in
any type of game.
It was a kind of issue between the federation and
So it had nothing to do with money?
No.
It just had to do with...
Like your federation was putting problems between papers, and they were asking for money. And after 1 year, they like solved the problem, and I started playing.
So it was more the federation than it was.
Yeah, it was Uruguayan federation that really gave me like big issue. It was like the president back in the days was one of these bad guys that he really wanted me to stay in Uruguay and play for that team and for the national team. It was like really, really tough.
But when you played for the national team, you were pretty successful. As a youth team, you got the silver medals and the bronze in the FIBA South American Games. In the U-17 2005, you basically took the team to the finals. It was 26 points. I got here 8 rebounds and 4 assists in that game.
Yeah, that was...
I mean, you were huge for this team.
Yes. Well, when I was 13, 14, I always played for the under 16, under 15, and 14 for Uruguay. But after all this problem happened with the federation, I stopped going with the national team till last summer.
Right.
I went to play with with a big team that we have, the American Cup in Uruguay.
That was after 4 years of absence, right?
Yes, 4 or 5, yes.
Okay.
Because yes, I was really hurt about everything that happened. So after that guy left the federation, I decided to go back to play with the national team.
Now, considering that your dad was such a superstar and so famous and well-known and won the South American title for this team, what was going through his mind? What kind of support was he giving you? What kind of advice was he giving you?
He was my number one fan, but I was feeling a little bit bad because everybody was, oh, your son don't want to come with play for the national team. What's wrong with your son? But he took it in the best way possible. It was kind of bad for him because he took all the bad things over there because he was the one who was staying in the country. I was here playing ball. I mean, right. I didn't read the news. I just figured out all the things because I was talking with my dad. But, I mean, he dealt with that situation really, really well, and I'm really thankful for everything he did for me back in the days.
You were here not getting paid.
I was getting paid.
Paid, you yes. just weren't playing.
Yes.
And your attitude was like, take the money away,
just
let me play.
Yes, exactly. I don't really care. I mean, when I was 15, I was like, I don't really care about the money. I just want to play basketball.
Let me play and I'll make my own money.
Exactly.
And I read this and I kind of laughed at it at first, but I understand in 2008, they said you had a dispute with the federation team over a ticket for your girlfriend.
Yeah,
was it that petty?
I mean, the story was I remember exactly how that happened. I was in La Sarote, my ex-girlfriend, and I twisted my ankle 2 weeks before. I was hurt, and one of the guys got hurt, and they called me, hey, you need to come back. You need to come to Uruguay to play for this next tournament in Chile. Da, da, da. I'm like, listen up, I'm hurt. I can't. I'm with my girlfriend in La Sarote. I'm not going to go because I'm hurt. And the next day, they post on the website, Jason Granger's not coming because he's asking for a ticket for his girlfriend. And after that, I was like, I'm done with them. I'm really done. So
seems so petty.
It is.
There was another report that you didn't come because you were injured. Was that the same? Those two?
I was hurt, but I was like, I'm not going to put in my position, force my body for people that don't really care about me. You know what I'm saying?
Because right.
They don't let me play when I was 15. Why I should go there for free and play for a country or for a team that don't really, really care about my future? So I decided to stop going because that guy, that pressing was there.
But now with the cambio, I'm trying to jump in Spanish here, with the change of presidency in 2012, you decided to go back. What did that mean for you and your dad?
Oh, it was amazing because the tournament was in Uruguay. We played the state, we played Panama, and we played DR, and that was an amazing feeling because, I mean, I had to deal with a lot of criticism, my dad too, but mm-hmm. once I show up there and I did my thing, everything was cleared up. It's like we start from zero again. It was really, really a nice feeling.
Did you you must have got a lot of negativity from people considering the fact that you decided not to go for 4 years or 5 years or whatever. And for, you know, even though it comes out publicly that it was a ticket over your girlfriend or it was an injury or whatever, it just sounds bad.
It's really bad. It was a lot of people say a lot of lies about me.
Right.
And once I went there, last summer, everybody knew the truth. You know, it was like they were really hurting my name on my family's name. They were treating me like I'm not a professional. I'm like a kid that he don't really want to play for his country. That's not true because I play for my country since I was 12 years, exactly, right. 12 years old. So I was really hurt. They really hurt my feelings. That main guy who was the president back in the days, but now it's another story. We got different people in the federation. I'm really excited to play in the future for
so
my
you're
country.
Back. You're back.
I am. Nice. As long as I'm healthy, I am.
Let's move away from all that stuff and get into Spain. Estudiantes is a club to me that is always in my heart because I played against them for years, and it was probably one of the best teams to play against, you know, because of the fans and the following. They've kind of gone a different direction over the last few years because of Christ or whatever. But from playing in the EBA, what was it like being an Estudiantes? Because at that point, you're thinking, man, I know I'm good enough to play.
You know? Well, I mean, they're my family. They was the team that gave me the chance to come to make my dream come true, open the door to Euro to play basketball, and be as a Estudiantes ex-player. It was I'm talking about almost 10 years ago. I got to say, it was a really, really big family. It was a real big opportunity for me, and I'm really thankful for all the guys who work out with me in Estudiantes. I think it's was a really, really good organization.
They had to be patient with you because you got a guy that you bring all the way from Uruguay. He's getting paid.
Exactly.
And he's practicing, but he's not playing. How much time was it from the time you arrived to the time you had to play your first game?
Almost a year and a half.
That's patience, my man, especially in Europe.
A lot, because my first contract I signed for 6 years, so that was like 2+2+2.
Right.
You know how that works. Me and my agent were like begging them, like, listen up, please. I want to stay. I want to prove, like, I want to show you guys that I can play.
They had to know that you can play.
Of course. I mean, they put money for the future, and that was really successful.
I don't think anybody could really realize what it's like to leave a country, to leave your home. It doesn't matter if you're coming from bad to better, from better to bad. No one really understands what it's like to make that switch. Even though you spoke the language.
I know. That's right.
You know,
that's
most
right.
people come in, they don't speak the language. It's difficult.
Exactly.
But no one can really figure out what it is to be away from family, to be away from friends, away from your comfort zone. It's a lot of credit to you as a young man, because you were a young man at that time, and as a player.
Exactly. I mean, I always say I was really lucky to be in Estudiantes, you know, in a place that had a lot of kids coming from outside, people from Brazil, guys from England, from Cuba. They had a bunch of we're living in the residence, and I was really lucky because they really helped me a lot. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe if I was in another team and they were like, "Oh, he can't play, he don't have the paper, we're gonna sign another guy," but they really helped me a lot. That was in that time. I remember I had a bunch of offers, but that was the only team to let me keep studying. Okay. And my parents were like, "All right, if you want to go to Europe," because I had an option to go to Europe or go to high school, and they were like, "If you want to go to Europe, you gotta finish your school." Good. So I was
good parenting, right?
Exactly.
There.
I was like, I love European basketball. My dream was like coming to play in European basketball. I was like, all right, I don't care about the money. I just want to go and play. If I got to finish my school, I'm going to do it. So I think it was the perfect place for me to start playing basketball.
Yeah, a lot of times it's just the right situation that makes
the right place.
Because you can be here, but be in the wrong situation. Like you said, a lot of teams don't care. They're like, hey, this guy can't play. Let's get rid of him. Let's move him.
You know how
in the long run, you're a piece of meat.
Exactly.
you know
how this works.
One day, you're a nice piece of filet mignon. Yes. Another day, you're just a nice piece of, you know.
End of the day, this is a business. You know how it works.
I did some checking up by you. Talked to some people. I had to before. I got here. And one of the stories that cracked me up is because I know the person I'm going to talk about, Gonzalo Martinez.
Oh, okay. Gonzalito,
And I laugh because they told me that you were with Coach Perasovic.
Exactly.
When he was here. And he's the first person that actually called you up to start practicing first team. And from the rumor has it, the point guards, Gonzalo and a couple other guys, they were like, man, get this guy out of here about the third or fourth day.
You know? I remember exactly. I was 17. They were like 30, 32, 33. I was I want to play. So I was playing. I mean, I wasn't worried about the ball. I just wanted to play defense. You know, Coach Perasovic was like, if you play defense, you're going to play. So from the first second in practice, it was like, all right, I'm going to play.
Perasovic said that?
Exactly. The guy who never played defense. If he heard me.
Him and I had a competition and I played defense. Hey, but you got to understand something. I'm going to make this public. Back in our day, if we played defense and shut the other guy down and scored 5 points, we got cut.
Exactly. You had to get buckets, right?
Yeah, had to score 25. If we didn't score 25, we were going home.
That's what changed
defense,
now, right?
Man, you didn't play any defense. I'm like, of course I didn't play defense because I'm smart. So he brought you up, and Gonzalo, I mean, I know Gonzalo, and I know his brother Pablo. They're half the size of you.
I mean, even less. I mean, Gonzalo's a great guy. He helped. This is one of the guys who really helps me a lot.
He didn't want you around, though.
I know, but I was like, every practice, I was like, I'm sorry. I really sorry. I had to apologize because I was playing physical with him, and he was so little, but he was so smart.
And he's that vet, too, that wants to, like, hey, man, let's just chill through practice, man.
But, like, his basketball IQ was unbelievable, and I learned a lot from him.
There's also a word about PlayStation in the locker room.
Yep.
And you were the leader of the PlayStation game?
I was a kid, you know?
But
I was living by myself.
I heard that players started showing up late for practice so they could finish the PlayStation game.
Exactly.
And coach is like...
Yes, we got fined a couple of times because like practice starts 6. And we're playing a basketball game or something, and we show up and practice like 6:05, and coach was like, all right, PlayStation is over. So we really had to stop with that.
So that was taken out of the locker room.
And y'all play basketball. Like,
we play basketball, boxing, football. We play everything.
More sports. Than
yeah,
than
so we, play, we play everything. Like, people were showing up in practice like hour or 2 hours before practice play PlayStation, which really addicted. It was kind of crazy.
That's what I heard.
I mean, I was 17. I was like, all right, I don't have a family. I don't have a girl. I'll just go in there and spend time playing PlayStation. You know?
You know who told me all this was Javi.
Oh, for sure.
he also told me about some competition one day that y'all were shooting from half court, and I forgot who you were shooting against, and you busted the trainer's face open.
Oh, my gosh. He was so mad. He made us run the next week, like 10 200s and 5 300. He really was upset. I remember that. I'm not going to forget that.
Said he told
I'm going to text Javi about that.
I appreciate him giving me some information. Now, in 2011, you're eligible for the NBA draft. You didn't get drafted. Was that like a dream as a young boy?
Not really.
Not expecting it? You didn't care?
It was never a dream. Like I told you before, my dream was kind of play European basketball. Mm-hmm. And I did it. And after that, I was like, whoa, as a basketball player, I really like more European basketball than NBA. So I was like, I want to make my career here. If one day the NBA door is open, I might take the shot, but right now I'm really comfortable with the career I've been having, so I'm really happy for that.
You gave it a shot in 13 and 14.
Yes, I went to the Summer League.
The Celtics and the Cavs.
Exactly. I mean, I had a couple offers. I had an opportunity to go to the league, but like we say before, it wasn't the right situation
right.
and the right timing, so I decided to keep playing in Europe.
In 2014 when you went, you were under contract still, right? You were under contract with Unicaja at that time. 2013, you were a free agent.
Yes.
You hadn't signed yet with Unicaja. Were you more available to go in one time or the other? Was 2014 just to go to get a workout in and to see what it was like again? Or
no, not really. I was thinking about more playing in a EuroLeague team. So Unicaja was the first team to try to hire me in that time, and I think it was a perfect situation to keep growing up as a basketball player under Joan Plaza hands, and I think I took the right decision.
Any aspirations left for the NBA, or is your commitment now to be?
Well,
you got a lot of stuff to stay for these days.
Yeah. I mean, I really like to, right now, I'm 29, I really like to take, if I have the opportunity in the future, take a shot before I retire. Mm-hmm. Hopefully it can happen.
You got two more years with Basconi.
I got this one and one more, exactly.
This one and one more. You and I got these two things in common. One is Unicaja, the other one is Basconi. And I love Madrid. I love living here, playing in Malaga. It was tough to beat. I mean, I remember my agent called me up, and I was like, where's Malaga, man? I'm that typical American. Didn't know where it was, you know? He's like, it's good weather, beaches, nude beaches, and palm trees. I'm like, I'm in, man. bring me to us from upstate New York. Oh, where it's like minus 30 Celsius, you know?
I love that place.
But it's a great organization. What do you like most about it? I mean, just
especially the people who work in the organization. They're great. The weather, the food. People in the city are really, really nice. I mean, they help you from the first second. So it's one of the places I really want to go back in the future.
Yeah, it's just a great place to live. The weather is beautiful. But then you took off to Turkey for 2 years. And don't get me wrong. I love me some Istanbul, man. There ain't nothing like it. There's no city like it in the world. But that's a change now.
After, I always say the same, after nine season in Spain, I was like, I need a change. Mm-hmm. And then I had an offer from Efes where Iku was the coach and was a really good, I mean, like roster player like Ortel, Saric, Derrick Brown, mm-hmm. like Tyus, Dunson. So I had a big opportunity to go there and trying to make it to the Final Four. You know, it was like, Efes is a great organization with a great head coach. I want to take that shot. I was like, after 10 years in Spain, I was like, why not? Let me take that. I mean, let's see, let's explore the world a little
living
bit.
Living-wise, was it a difficult transition for you?
In the beginning, yes. But
it's a big city, man.
Yes, huge.
It's unbelievable.
Unbelievable. Traffic is crazy.
I hate every time I have to go there, but the minute I get there, I love it.
I mean, I love it. Yeah. I really love it. It was one of the places I really want to stay, but after all the bombing and terrorist attacks, I was like, I got to get out of here.
Get out of here, yeah.
It was kind of scary, though. But
see, no one realizes all that stuff either.
When you watch it on the TV, you're like, wow, this is kind of sad. But when you leave it right inside in the country, like bombs exploding like 20 minutes away from your house, you're like, wow, I stay like, after all that happened, I remember I was going to practice and going home. I was like, I can't live like this, you know? I'm the kind of guy, I like it's to go out of restaurants, you know, have right. a cup of walk or have a coffee with your girl. So it's like, I can't do this anymore. So, I mean, you walk around with your eyes really open. Like, yeah. I mean, if you see something.
But I love it, though. I love it.
It's a beautiful, it's a beautiful country. I really recommend it. It's a place you can go and visit, like, for a couple of weeks because it's really nice.
Yeah. When you make a change like that, you went from Estudiantes to Unicaja and you got it yourself into the EuroLeague, then you went into Istanbul and you came here to Baskonia. Is being a EuroLeague team a prerequisite for you? Is it the most important thing, or is it a financial move? Is it a move like the city? Like you said before, you just needed a change in
exactly.
Istanbul. But I mean, yeah, you can make a change and go anywhere.
But I think it was a great situation, you know, playing on the, I mean, with Ivković, I was like, well, we're talking about one of the best coaches in EuroLeague basketball.
Man,
was
he's
like,
tough, though, isn't he?
Really tough. really tough.
He's that old school Yugoslavia stuff, man.
Really
ain't no
old
joke.
School.
ain't no joke.
Bro, great guy. Great guy. I learned a lot from him.
Statistically, those two seasons in Turkey were pretty much your best seasons. I mean, you played the most time. You put up great numbers, and you had good teammates around you. But you got so close to that Final Four. I think you lost to Fenerbahce,
yeah,
right?
No, we lost. We lost only Piakos my last year with Perasovic in the fifth game.
Okay, that's right. Yeah.
I mean, we won the second game over there. They forced the fifth game and was really tough. You know how it is playing only in the Pireo. Mm-hmm. Fifth game against Olympiacos, you know, it's not going to happen, but we were really close.
I'm going to talk about it a little bit later here. What's the feeling like, man? I mean, it's just so.
I was so pissed. after that loss, we played really bad in the Turkish league. Like, we were all like, give up. It's like,
normal,
wow, man. We were like 10 minutes away to make it to the Final Four. We really had it in our hands and. Like, we couldn't do it. It was, like, kind of really bad. And after we lost in the semifinals against the Turkish Beşiktaş, we even made it to the Turkish final. It was, like...
It's interesting because a lot of people say if you win it, you have that letdown afterwards, which isn't true. It's like if you win it,
exactly.
You just want to keep winning. You get that feeling of winning, you know? You want to keep going.
Yeah, exactly. But playing five games in 2 weeks against Olympiacos and... Being, I mean, 10 minutes away from made it to the Final Four is like, wow. I mean, man, we were like, I was really hurt. Mentally, I was really, really hurt. After that, I was like, kind of give up. But...
And now you're back. Your mom lives in Spain, right?
Yeah, she lives in Malaga.
She lives in Malaga.
Yes.
All right, so you got good reason
exactly.
to go visit all the
yes.
time. There you go. One thing I noticed when I was looking at all your stuff is your three-point percentage throughout the first 4 years was around 31%, which is, you know, not bad, but I'm sure you wanted to be a little bit higher, but... You skyrocketed last season. You got up to 40%, and I don't even want to talk about this year right now. I'm not gonna say it because I don't want to jinx it. You know, your game's been amazing. And your 2-point percentage also went up. It was a career high in your first year in Malaga. You know, first of all, I attribute that to the fact that you're getting better shots because statistically, nobody really sees the fact that in FS and Malaga, a lot of times you had the ball in your hand with 3, 4, 5 seconds left on the shot clock, and you had to go. And, you know, I mean, it's a big difference between being 3 for 5 and being 3 for 7.
Exactly.
You know, and no one sees that. And I think last year I saw you get more quality shots. You had your feet set. You were ready to go at it. I think, was it because you were more comfortable with your surroundings? Or what did it have to do with?
Well, I think that's one of the main points. Like, I felt really comfortable with my teammates. You know, and the system that I'm playing, like I always say, I think it's the first or second year that I got people who can create for me, you know.
Exactly.
Not only for me, but not for everyone. But the year before, I was the guy who had the ball, and sometimes I had to take a bad shot in the last seconds, and they always bring the percentage down. But this year and last year, I got plays like Shengelia, you know, Marcelinho Huerta, they can make plays, and they can create open shots for me.
Yeah, Bubois
last year.
He penetrated, got to the basket. And then, I mean, it was a great team chemistry last year. And the fact that I saw you just set up for shots, it wasn't like you had to, like, dribble your way into shots. And no one reads into that. No one, you know, it's like, oh, man, only 31%. But, man, look at what it really means, a 31%, because, I mean, right now you're showing that you can shoot the rock.
I've been working out a lot, you know. As long as you're getting older, you're trying to add things to your game, and you're not the same player as you was 20, and you can run up and down for 35 minutes without getting tired. right now. I'm 21. I'm trying to add a lot of little things on my
21.
On my game.
You're 29. Man.
I mean, 29. I wish I was 21.
If you're 21, I'm 45. I'm going back with you.
So I'm trying to get better every single day.
Give me some stuff about my boy Toko, please, Shangela.
My boy Toko Shangela, that's my guy.
Man,
I love
this guy. Energy, attitude. It just seems so, it seems like it's contagious on the
He's a leader. He's a leader. Like, he's a great guy, great teammate, a great friend. I mean, he's the kind of guy, he always have a smile on his face. He know when things come serious, he got to be the first one to be serious. He's a hard worker. It's a great example for everyone.
He's on my radar, man. I can't wait to see him. I'm just embarrassed to talk to him.
You're gonna have fun with him.
That man crush on him. I just think he's awesome. Who do you hang out most in the team?
I think we got a great group of guys. We got such a great group of chemistry that we all get along with each other. You know, we have 13 guys on the team. And I said it last year, and I repeated this year. I think it's the best team I've ever been. You know, us. Great group of people that really, we all respect each other. We all good guys, and that really means a lot for me.
Tell a 53-year-old man that used to play this game, what the hell is Mario Kart?
Well, when I came last year.
You obviously brought this video game.
No, they had this before I came. That was Bob was a jig about video games. He loved video games, and he's the guy. Oh my god! And when I signed here, they were like, "Well, everybody had to buy the Nintendo Switch so we can play Mario Kart on the road trip." I was like, "What is that?"
So you had no idea.
I had no idea.
Are you addicted?
No anymore.
Not anymore?
Nah, she don't let me.
We're gonna go there. Don't worry. That's what I was leading to right there.
I only play on the road trip. Now we're playing cards right now.
Oh, you guys are in the car. Yeah, what are y'all playing?
We're playing Uno.
Okay.
Yeah,
Uno's old school, man.
That's old school. Yeah,
that was back in my day.
We got Marcelino Huertas on the roster. What you think?
Nah, that's not right. That's not right. He's only 35, man. Leave him alone. One of the big questions I have about last season is, it might be a little bit sensitive, but it was strange to me what happened early in the year with Pablo as the head coach. Not because y'all weren't playing good, because a new head coach, a new system, you expect teams to kind of get off to a difficult start. But to me, it was like the sudden switch when Pedro showed up.
Yes.
Where did that come from? What happened?
Well, Pedro was great. Life with Pablo was amazing. I can't say nothing.
He was a player's coach.
Yes, exactly. But the results wasn't showing up. Mm-hmm. Pedro came with fresh ideas. You know, he's a really experienced coach, and he knew what to do with us. We had a young team with a lot of new players, and he came with fresh ideas defensively. He's a defensively coach, and from the first moment, we just switched up.
It was amazing.
The change was from the first second, from the first week. We knew that we had a chance to do something big with this guy.
I mean, I had never seen anything like that in basketball. I mean, you always see that initial change where like there's a change of coaches, and maybe like for two games, three games, y'all play well, then all of a sudden you got to kind of like get to know each other again. But last year was amazing. I was a huge fan of last year's team. I actually wrote an article last year, like sometime in late January, early February, that said. Y'all were going to make the playoffs. This is when you guys were like 14th, 13th.
Yes, and we started 0-5.
Right.
Like, a lot of people forget about that. A lot of people forget about that.
I didn't forget about it because I like to play a little bit. So I was like, yeah, this team's about to roll. I got them on a roll here. And then you guys won so many games. I said, you're going to make the final. You're going to make the final eight. To me, there's no doubt about it. I looked at the schedule. I looked at Maccabi's schedule because you guys were in an all-out battle with Maccabi at the time. And then there's that one game against your ex-team.
Ephes, I remember.
At home, a two-point loss. They were in last place. And that was a difference between y'all ended up in sixth place and ended up in seventh place.
Exactly.
And then when you see Zalgiris go on to beat Olympiacos, get to the Final Four, were you thinking like, man. What could have been, you know? I mean.
Yeah, but it's you know how it's basketball. You know, we play against Ephes. I mean, they had no pressure. They came to Buesa like, well, we got nothing to do.
Right,
and then they start playing. They start hitting tough shots.
Y'all were rolling.
They start hitting tough shots, and they were like, oh, we can't believe they can win. And then I remember my Collins drove like 32 on us. Steamage was killing us. And after we lost that game, we were in the locker room. We're like, what we just did? You know, I mean, we had a chance to end up six and play against only Packers, and now we got to play against.
Not playing well.
Exactly. They weren't playing well. Spanulis was hurt. I remember that time. And now we got to go to Turkey and play against Fenerbahce, Obradovic. You know, that's going to be really tough.
Yeah.
But, well, I mean, our goal was make it to the top eight. We did after.
After our own five star. Exactly. That's amazing. Yes. I mean, that's a successful season. But it's like, what could have been? Because
exactly, like, you would think about that.
I was like, these guys get into a playoff with Olympiacos and beat them. They got a chance.
Yes,
you know. Exactly. I mean, of course, when you go to Final Four, you always got a chance. It's a 2-game thing. But I just think the momentum and the confidence, everything would have carried y'all. But
yeah, it was kind of like we were looking at each other like, yo, what are we doing right now?
God. I was amazed when I saw that. I was like, no.
I was so pissed. I was really so pissed.
What's the buzz like this year with the Final Four being in Victoria? Is there a certain buzz in the locker room? Is it not talked about? Do y'all try to ignore it?
We're not really talking about it, but you know how the media is. You know, every time we go out there, like, hey, what do you think about Final Four in Victoria? But a lot of people think we have pressure, but we use that as a motivation. We all know it's hard to make it to the Final Four, but being at home with our fans, I think will be a huge thing for us and for the fans, and we're going to fight to make it. I know it's going to be hard, but we go by game and we do our things. Maybe we'll get the shot.
Man, that's one of those answers I hate right there. I'm going to let you off the hook. That's like, hey, let's just take it day by day. I hate that answer, man. I feel like I'm just another person, man, when you answer me like that. I thought we were boys here, man. I thought we had something special going on. It's got to be hard today. Like when I played, it was, you know, if you had a bad game or you lost, you just didn't go, you didn't walk out the door. You didn't go get the paper. You didn't go put on the TV. You just sat in your own world. But now I'm like, you got 17,000 followers on Instagram that have an opinion. Well, there's probably about 1,500 of them that are like your close people that aren't gonna bug you. But those other 15,500, I mean, how is it to wake up in the morning and maybe see like messages about, you know, the bad game or the team losing?
Well, it's part of our job. I mean,
yeah, but it's not. But that's part of your job. That's part of your job if you want it to be.
Exactly, but I mean,
expose yourself.
Yes, I expose myself, but I use everything what people said. Use that as motivation. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't have to prove anything to nobody. I mean, I'm in the place I am because I work hard every single day. But people, I mean, it's open to say whatever they want. I mean, I'm not gonna listen to them. Maybe I read it. Maybe I'm gonna laugh, or maybe I'm gonna think he's a jerk. But I mean, it's their opinion. I respect their opinion. They got to respect my job. You know, some days I'm going to play good. Another day I'm not going to play good. It's part of the game. But I just got to try to do my best, you know. So those negativities, people, they don't text me or they don't post videos or whatever. So
that's pretty tight because I don't know if I could do it. I don't know if I could, like.
I mean, it's not easy.
Yeah,
easy.
I would take it personal.
I'm not going to lie to you. Like 6, 7 years ago, I was the kind of guy like, oh, if you text me, I'm going to reply to you. Who you think you are? You think you know who I am because you posting something under, yeah. I mean, behind a phone. You think you're more a man. But right now, well, if they want to say something, they just say it, man.
And I know Victoria well enough. I played there for 3 years, man.
I mean, it's a small place.
You can't go out.
You can. I was there for 1 year and went out one time. Oh, I remember we went out for one of the guys' birthday till 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, and we couldn't even walk for 2 blocks.
It's crazy, man. It's great. It's a great city, man. I love it.
Great city.
I love living there for 3 years.
But it's too cold.
It's cold, man. It's cold. It's cold. It gets cold there. But, man, you eat well, though.
Wow.
Man, the food's amazing.
Can't complain about that.
Another part of my job, we talk about friends and extended family and everyone that we meet in this business, in your business. And the great thing is you develop all these relationships over time. But the other thing is you get to see people come and go. And I understand that you had a good relationship with Giannis Thima, who took off to Olympiacos.
I was talking with him like 20 minutes ago.
Were you?
Yes, I know him since last 5 years. We're working out every summer in Miami together.
Right. It's like, because you guys have the same agent, right?
Yeah, it's like my brother for another mother, you know?
So, did you try to talk him out of it? Did he let you know, or did he just drop the bombshell? did he do like that nasty ex-girlfriend thing?
Did he really? He did. Oh, he did. I was kind of upset. He was like, I got to tell you something. I'm like, tell me. No, next week. And then I read on the news, Giannis team was signing on the back. I was like, oh, you mother.
So he broke up with you over the media.
Yes, he did.
In my line of work now, I get to meet a lot of different people too, and I feel fortunate to have met someone that's pretty special in your life. I'm gonna give you three guesses to who I'm talking about right now.
My fiance.
That would be her, wouldn't it? For anybody who doesn't know, it's Melanie who works for Movie Star TV. When you see this beautiful woman interviewing players and coaches at halftime, that's exactly who we're talking about. That's Jason's fiance who just recently got engaged. And like I said, I just want to congratulate you. And how long have you been together?
Well, I know her since, for 5 years, but we've been together.
Well, of course.
Yes, I know her for a long time. We really all have a good relation. But
were you always trying to, like, chase it? Or?
No. She had,
chasing you?
Nah, not really. Not really. She was married. I was single, but I knew she was married. With once I figured out she got divorced, I was like, this is my shot.
This is
it.
Right?
Take it.
We've
been together for more than a year, and we just got that chemistry that I never had before. She's a really important person in my life, and I'm really happy to have her.
That's awesome. Y'all had a big trip to Bangkok, but before we get onto that trip, Did you go old school? Did you ask your dad for permission?
I did. I asked dad and mom.
So you got the chivalry, man. You asked mom.
Yes, I asked mom first, and then I asked dad.
Look at you, even smart, man. You went right to the mother first.
I gotta go mama first.
Yeah.
Because it works.
But the bottom line is, if you get mama's permission, it doesn't matter what dad says.
Exactly.
I love that.
Mama runs the family, so.
And they were all about it.
Yes, exactly.
No issues, no problems.
No issues.
They were
like,
"Go
ahead,
keep her happy." And
exactly.
About now, you got to tell me how you did. You got to let the people in the crossover know what kind of romantic is in this body of Jason Graham.
I'm a romantic guy.
Let me hear what happened.
It took me like 3 months to organize. It was a little company. Like, we make a trip in Asia. We like visit like 3-4 countries.
I saw some of your posts and everything. But I didn't see nothing about the engagement, though.
We keep it quiet. We keep it quiet. And it took me like 3 months. Like, I hired this company to make organize flash mobs.
No.
Yes. So I took her out. I was like, I got a couple. They invited me to this little event, this restaurant by the river. It's really nice. Da, da, da. So we show up there. All were actors, like 15 talent people drinking.
In the restaurant.
In the restaurant.
Get out.
We closed that. I closed that for us. And suddenly one of our favorite songs started playing.
What song?
"1+1" by Beyonce. And she looked at me like, what's going on? I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. So one couple started dancing, then 3, 4, 5, 6, and then she was like, she started looking at me. She started getting nervous, and she ain't thought about it. She knew I was proposer. So then a little girl came to her to the middle. It was a little big post. Huge poster behind her. Milena, you want to marry me? So I got on my knees and get her the ring, and she started crying. She said yes.
Yeah,
it was really nice.
I
took
love
me like
it.
2 or 3 months to organize. It was
dude, the flash mob. That's a great idea.
Yes,
I'm already
it was
married.
Really
so
special.
I can't use it.
By the way, I saw your
I just got married. That was my second time.
Oh, it was your second time?
Yeah, I got married last year in October 20th. The same girl. I figured we went to Santorini. I'm like, I'm going to take advantage of your romance. I'm going to try to be like Jason Granger. That's my thing. This has got nothing to do with the conversation. My mom passed away almost 6 years ago now, next month, and she's Italian. And I know she's looking down on me right now as I'm sitting in an interview, and as I feel like she's always looking down on me. And she'd kill me if I didn't ask you when the first kid's coming.
When?
Yeah, she's Italian.
Hopefully soon. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know when. Hopefully soon.
All right, that's the kind of answer that she wanted, too.
Yes.
The kind of answer she looked for.
Hopefully soon. We'll
in the meantime,
know.
Is Miel? Is Miel your,
yes,
your,
yes,
we, your surrogate we, child?
Exactly. We got two, Miel and Tuffy.
But tell me about Miel, because
we were thinking about to adopt a dog, like 2 days before we found her. So one day it was sunny.
You found her on the street.
On the street. It was a beautiful day in Victoria. So we were like, all right, let's go for a walk.
One of the days you go out in Victoria.
Exactly. And I was like, all right, let's go. So we were walking close from home, and I saw a little dog far away. It was like she was hurt with a broken ribs, broken leg. And I was like, oh, wow, she found us.
Oh,
and
man.
Then I looked
so
at
you
Milena.
So you rescued this dog? Then.
Yes, I looked at Milena. And I was like, what do you want to do with her? I'm like, she was like.
You already had the dog at home,
yes.
too.
She was like, all right, let's take it to the vet. Let's see if she got a chip and everything. And if not, we just skip it. I'm like, you sure? And you know how the women are. She's the boss. I was like, all right, whatever. We're thinking about it to adopt a dog. And it was really a big consensus that we find her after
That's crazy.
After 2 days. And
now she's fine. Everything's good.
She's a lovely dog. She really is. She's
good,
crazy.
That's awesome, man. To go out and rescue a dog like that.
I've rescued both of my dogs. One's in Barcelona and now Miel in Vitoria.
Tell me about your sneakers.
My sneakers?
You know I'm getting all this inside information on you. I heard you walk in the house and just throw clothes all around. You can care less about the clothes. But the sneakers have to be lined up perfectly. They have to be parallel. The right one has to be on the left side, you know?
Yeah, some paranoid with that. I don't
know
why.
How many you got?
A bunch of shoes, over 50 pairs. But they always got to be, line it up. If not, I get mad. I don't know why. Since I was a kid, I can't explain you why, but if I see my right shoe on the left side, I'm probably going to be mad at you. And Milena knows about it.
So, can she touch your shoes?
Oh, yeah, definitely. She can touch
my
shoes.
She just has to know how to put them.
Exactly. She had to know how to put it. If she put the right shoe on the left side and the left shoe on the right side.
It's a problem.
Yes, we're going to.
Is it a superstition thing? Is it bad luck? Or is it just something?
Maybe. Like I told you, I don't know. I don't like the way they look. I don't know. I don't know.
You got any superstitions before games?
A bunch. I got a lot, but I keep that privately.
Come on, give me one. Just give me one small one.
I always score the last basket before we go to the locker room.
Okay. All right, that's a good one. I'm not going to get any more personal because I did stuff with underwear.
You know how it is.
And you know the worst thing about the superstition is when it doesn't go good, when you screw something up, you're like, oh man, I forgot
to do this, right?
You made it known publicly that you've had a lot of struggles, and we've talked about them here. You've been real open, and I appreciate your honesty with them. You said everything that you have was earned.
Exactly.
I want to give you a quick moment. We're almost done here to explain exactly what you earned and how you earned it to the people that are listening to you.
Well, me as a guy growing up in Uruguay and being there, as a young kid who always want to play European basketball, and my dad being a professional, they always maybe in Uruguay and South America, they were like, oh, this kid is playing basketball because it's Jeff Granger's son, you know? And I always just want to be Jason Granger, prove everyone that whatever I earn, whatever I do is because I work hard every single day. You know, I'm a hard worker, and I am in the position where I am because I work every single day. And I have no off days. I work out in the summer. I work out, in the morning, afternoon. So whatever I earn is because I really work hard.
That's what kids, I think, nowadays have to understand. They think when they see someone playing that it was just a cakewalk. It's just because you got talent, you can get there. But there's so many talented players that don't make it, and it's because of the lack of work ethic.
Yes.
That's why I wanted to let you get that
I always tell a lot of kids, the hard thing is not to make it, it's to stay in the same place you are. You know, if once you make it, if you want to take basketball as a job, you have to put a lot of hard work.
Sacrifice, man.
Sacrifice. A lot of people don't know we sacrifice a lot. We don't see, I see my family once a year.
Right. But to people, that's an assumed sacrifice. You know what I mean? But no one knows what it's like. It's like, oh, well, he's making a ton of money.
Exactly.
And his family, and he's supposed to be, oh, okay, well, that's fine. You know, it's not like that. Just to finish up here, give me, and don't be politically correct on me because I let you go one time with the politically correctness. Give me the team or the teams that when you look at it in the schedule, you're just like, man, I can't wait to play against this team. Because everybody's got that team where they feel most comfortable.
I do.
Where you mark that thing off in the yellow marker, you know?
I got a game tomorrow against Madrid. That's the kind of teams I really like to play against, you know?
Uh-huh.
I love to play against the best players in Europe, like Jewel, you know?
Right.
Then Cheska's another team I really like to play.
But what's that one team where you know you're just going to go out and bust them? You know you're going to get 20 on them?
Chesk is one of the teams that every time I play, I feel...
Yes,
especially in Russia. I don't know, but the last time I played in Russia, I dropped good numbers, and we had a couple wins. And Sagittis is the other team that every time I play, I don't know, every time I go to counters, I have big games.
Big games?
Yeah.
What's the other one? What's the ones you hate facing? What's the ones you just like?
I hate to play Fenerbahce.
Yeah.
It's nothing personal, but every time I go play in Fenerbahce, they got one of the best fans in Europe.
Hard,
and I play for FS.
Right.
They kind of.
So that's even double for you.
Yes. And I never was able to win one game over there. So hopefully this year.
I had players that I just, like, I looked at before a game. I was like, oh man, I hope he just shows up sick for the game, man, because you know, I just don't want to play against. I don't want him to get hurt or injured, you know. But like, you know, maybe the flu or something. And one of the guys is assistant coach in Moscow, Daryl Middleton. I hated playing against him, man. Who's that guy for you that you're like, God, I just don't want to do this.
I don't like to deal with the caller though.
Really?
Yes.
He's hard to defend.
It's hard to defend.
So it's more of to me, it was like D'd me up, and I hated.
No,
guys
but defense on me. I can say Spanoulis because you know I'm a competitive, you know, and I get mad when I lose. Spanoulis, a lot of people, I mean, everybody respects Spanoulis, and yes. I like to play tough.
I love him, man.
And sometimes when I play tough, I can't even touch him because I get a foul, and that really pisses me off.
Hey, that's earned, buddy.
Exactly.
That's earned.
Exactly. But it's like, wow, I know I'm playing great defense, but as soon as I touch him, he's going to flop, and ref is going to be like, foul or whatever.
Whoa.
I'm cool with Spanoulis, and he was like, yeah, because you flop a lot. I'm like, well, I learned this from you because I've been watching you play all this time. And then he started laughing. I'm like, you can't tell me about flopping because when you flop, I mean, I grew up watching you play, so.
But that's it, and we're out of here right now. Last question, and this is something I like to ask players. So much time left. After we're done playing this game. I retired in 2000. It's been 18 years since I played this game. That's 7 more years than I actually played professionally. What's your plans? What's your future look like? What do you have anything planned now? You have anything?
Well, of course. I got a couple of business running right now. I got
promoted a little bit.
I got an insurance agency. Okay. State Farm with my brother in the States.
Okay, good.
And a couple of truck company in the States. And I really like to start a real estate. I really think in every single day that I know this basketball career is really short, but I wanna when I retire, I just wanna live out of my business. You know, I wanna stay related with basketball.
Right.
Not professional basketball. I would like to work out with kids because I really love kids. You know, and like helping them out to reach the highest level possible. You know, and after that, just trying to enjoy life.
You mentioned earlier, you said home, and then you talk about the States, and now your business are in the States. Is home, do you consider home the States?
Yes. I mean, I have my family. Jersey and Miami.
And Miami.
That's where I go most of the time.
I'll take Miami.
Yes, me too. That's where I go most of the time. But now being here with Milena and her family, you know, I'm going to be between here and Miami.
Of course.
You know? Most of my family are in the States. I got family in Uruguay, but just a little part of my family.
Man, Jason, I can't thank you enough. Honestly, man, this has been
thank you for having me
sitting down with you. Everybody's told me how great of a guy you are, how humble you are, how everything, and none of it was a lie, man. I really appreciate you sitting down here on the crossover with me and spending time with the fans and everything else. And all I could do is wish you the best of luck this season. I want to see you guys in that Final Four in Victoria.
Me too,
I
want to
be calling that game, my man.
If we make it, I promise I'll be I invite you out of dinner.
All right. Oh, I already know the restaurant's there, so don't worry about it. All right, my man. I appreciate it. Good luck to you.
All right, thank you.
You got it, man.
Thanks for listening to The Crossover with Joe R. Lucas. If you like what you've heard, subscribe now so you don't miss an episode and leave us a review on iTunes and Apple Podcasts. You can also get in touch via Twitter and Instagram at EuroLeague using the hashtag ELCrossover or on Facebook at the EuroLeague.